The headline: Syria intercepts several Israeli missiles as Tel Aviv launches a second round of aerial attacks near Damascus. Tensions and political divisions are growing in the U.S. as New York grand jury indicts former President Donald Trump. And French police use forces for protesters rallying in the western city of Nantes against the use of force. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Israel has carried out a fresh missile strike on Syria, targeting positions near the country's capital city, Damascus. Syrian air defenses intercepted some of the missiles. The attack caused some material damage. Israel carried out similar attacks on Damascus early on Thursday. Damascus condemned the attack as an extension of the regime's fascist approach to regional countries. Iran also condemned the strikes. A foreign ministry spokesman, Nasser Kanani, said the international community's failure to give a deterrent response to such strikes has emboldened Israel to keep violating Syria's territorial integrity and sovereignty. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says one of its advisors has been killed in the Friday Israeli attack. The IRGC said it will give a response to the Israeli crime. Palestinians have rallied in the Gaza Strip to commemorate the anniversary of Land Day, stressing the right to return for those driven out of their homes. Walal Asi reports.
A massive march has been held along the fence separating the Gaza Strip from the occupied territories to commemorate the 47th anniversary of the Land Day. People from all walks of life took to the streets of the besieged Gaza Strip to stress their right to return to their land.
We are here today to commemorate the Land Day to stress on our Palestinian identity and our entitlement to the land. We say to the Israeli occupation, you have no place in Palestine. Leave it so the world can eventually enjoy peace and freedom.
Land Day marks the events of March the 30th, 1976, where six Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces during peaceful protests against the Tel Aviv regime's decision to seize tracts of Palestinian-owned lands. Palestinians call on the international community and the Arab countries to support the Palestinian people in their quest for liberation.
We are addressing all the international community, the Arabs, the Muslims in the world, to stand up, to stand up with us. To support us, to support also our resistance, to return to my home. We are refugees. We are going to return sooner or later.
The National and Islamic Action factions emphasized the unity of the Palestinian people. They also reaffirmed the Palestinians' right to resist, stressing that resistance is the sole way to restore the stolen Palestinian land.
Today we assert on the Palestinians' adherence to their lands and to the Al-Quds, the eternal capital of Palestine, and we affirm on the resistance as the most appropriate choice to free Palestine.
The Thursday peaceful demonstration turned violent when the Israeli forces shot and injured a Palestinian with live ammunition. Two others were injured when they were hit by tear gas canisters used by the regime's troops to disperse the protesters. This reminds us of what happened in the Great March of Return rallies, which began in 2018 and lasted for 86 weeks. During the protests, more than 300 Palestinians were killed by the Israeli troops, and thousands more sustained injuries, including so serious wounds that led to the loss of limbs.
I was wounded with Israeli live ammunition in the Great March of Return, and today, despite my injury in my leg that might get amputated, I am here today to commemorate the Land Day, stress on our steadfastness despite the Israeli atrocities.
The Israeli regime seizes the Palestinian-owned land and demolishes Palestinians' homes in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds in order to construct new illegal settlements.
These annual demonstrations serve as an act of collective resistance to the Israeli occupation as Palestinian demonstrators voice their anger at the regime's crimes and land grab policies and reiterate their entitlement and right of return to their own land. Al Al-Asif, Gaza.
The UN's top court says the United States has violated international law by freezing some Iranian assets. The International Court of Justice said Washington's seizure of funds belonging to several Iranian individuals and companies was, quote, manifestly unreasonable. The Hague-based court, however, said that it had no jurisdiction over Iran's central bank case. In the meantime, Iran's foreign ministry said the verdict of the ICJ once again shows the legitimacy of Iran's position and the illegal behavior of the United States. Iran took the U.S. to the ICJ in 2016 after the top American court ordered some $2 billion in Iranian assets to be frozen and given to survivors and relatives of attacks blamed on Iran. Tehran categorically denies these allegations. It says that the seizure is illegal and in breach of the 1955 Treaty of Amity with the U.S. signed before the 1979 Islamic Revolution. John Bosnich, a journalist and political analyst from Belgrade, joined us earlier saying that the United States does not give in to any form of international justice. Let's take a listen.
Unfortunately, because we live in a lawless world in which the United States doesn't even recognize the International Criminal Court, after hunting people all around the world on charges at kangaroo courts that it sets up anywhere it wants. But anyway, the United States doesn't recognize the International Criminal Court, and the United States reserves the right to not be judged by the International Court of Justice. And so I think that a number of countries have responded to these first announcements. The United States was the first country to declare right away that they would not submit to any international justice. So in this case, if I were, I support Iran's position to also not recognize certain aspects of this case. However, the moral victory is that the United States seized assets belonging to private banks and private individuals without legitimate court actions to prove that those individuals and those private companies were in any way responsible. And these are billions of dollars at stake, and America has to unfreeze them and return them. And as I said, there should be damages paid.
Tehran has roundly condemned remarks by the Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen regarding an agreement with the Azerbaijani Republic to establish a united front against Iran. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the move is yet another proof of the Israeli regime's intention to turn Azerbaijani soil into an arena to threaten Iran's national security. He also said that the Azeri foreign minister and the talks of a new phase of a strategic partnership between Tel Aviv and Baku imply that the anti-Iran nature of their cooperation exists. Kanani called for an explanation from the Azeri authorities in that regard. The fresh twist in Israeli-Azeri ties comes after Azerbaijan Republic opened its first embassy in Tel Aviv on Wednesday. And Donald Trump has become the first former U.S. president to face criminal prosecution. The indictment by a grand jury in New York comes after a years-long investigation into alleged hush money paid to Trump's person, paid by his personal lawyer to an adult actress, Stormy Daniels, ahead of the 2016 presidential election. The charges have not been made public. Trump is expected to be arraigned on Tuesday. Trump has denied any wrongdoing and has called for protests against what he describes as a political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history. Trump has also appealed to his supporters to provide money for a legal defense. In the meantime, a small number of Trump supporters rallied at his Mar-a-Lago property in Florida. His indictment has divided public opinion in the country.
I think that the charges that are being imposed on President Trump are unnecessary and should not be of interest, because at this moment, there are more important things, and I think that one thing is the presidency and politics. That is something personal from the past. We all have a past. We have mistakes, and I think there should be no charges.
I feel like, as for Trump running again in 2024, that he shouldn't be allowed, I feel. I feel that if he won, the division in this country would only become greater. I think a lot of it already is because of him.
You know, it's refreshing to finally see someone who's broken the law multiple times, or at least been accused of such, to finally get charged. And for me, it's not about Democrats and Republicans. I think it's holding our representatives to a higher standard. So I'm grateful for the indictment and interested to see where it goes.
Republicans have condemned the indictment as unprecedented and outrageous, criticizing what they call the weaponization of the justice system to advance political agenda. But some Democrats, including Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, have welcomed the indictment. She has urged political leaders to support justice and accountability, regardless of party affiliation, and says no one is above the law. Trump also faces felony investigations related to the 2020 election and over the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol by his supporters. We discussed this with our correspondent Colin Campbell from Washington, who explained why Trump's paying hush money to an adult entertainer is illegal and how it has led to his indictment.
So this goes back to what prosecutors are saying that the president engaged in, and this is in consideration of fraud, okay? And what they're saying is, ultimately, he used campaign money to cover up an affair that he had, using campaign money for that reason that could affect voting and affect an election is illegal, is what they're saying. Now, if he had used his private money out of his own pocket, that would have been fine, right? Morality aside, legally he would have been in the clear. But what they're saying is he collected money from campaign donors for his campaign, and then through a circuitous way, through his attorney, who at the time was Michael Cohen, and some people say he was even the president's fixer at the time, Michael Cohen paid off Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about the affair. The president has said that he is innocent. He has said that this is actually a campaign that has been orchestrated by the radical left trying to subdue him and, of course, and his candidacy for president and just make life miserable for him altogether. And so now that he's indicted, he is now the first first president in American history to be indicted to face criminal charges. And now we see how this all plays out, especially since this is happening in real time and it's never really happened before.
More than 1,000 people have attended a protest organized by local mothers in the U.S. state of Tennessee. The rally followed a recent deadly school shooting in the state capital city, Nashville.
It was important for me to be here today because I have children, I have grandchildren, and I am looking out for my future grandchildren. And we just don't have a government here in Tennessee that's willing to do anything about gun laws. And no one, in my opinion, needs an AR-15. I think all weapons like that, assault weapons, should be banned. The only person that should be carrying assault weapons is the military.
Demonstrators flooded the Tennessee state capitol to call for an end to gun violence and demand stricter gun control laws. They carried placards reading, "No more silence" and "We have to do better." A large number of students also attended the protest rally, expressing their clear concern about the safety of U.S. schools. They urged lawmakers to take measures to make it more difficult for people who could be potential threats to get a gun.
I have grown up all my life being scared of getting shot in school, and I really just want to fight for gun control because I'm tired of my life being put second to a firearm. And I want students to have the opportunity to be able to share their voices because they are the ones being affected.
They make it way too easy to get guns. People who could be potential threats. I heard that the shooter at the school this Monday obtained all of their weapons legally. And now they're trying to pass concealed carry so that teenagers can carry guns. And I do not think that it makes the problem better arming more people. I think reducing the amount of people who can be armed and reducing the impact that guns can have will help decrease the amount of mass shootings that we see every year.
The bloody shooting at Nashville's Convent School left 6 people dead, 3 of them 9-year-old children. The assailant was a former student at the school who was killed by police. The motive behind the shooting is not clear yet. A total of 90 school shootings have been reported in the U.S. so far this year, with last year's figure standing at an all-time record of 303. And French police use force to disperse protesters rallying in the western city of Nantes to condemn the excessive use of force by officers. The capital, Paris, also witnessed a similar demonstration. The protests come as 2 men are in a coma after clashes erupted between police and participants in a rally against the construction of a giant water reservoir in Sainte-Soline on Saturday. France has also recently faced nationwide protests against the government's pension reform plans. Human rights groups have slammed the heavy-handed tactics used by French police against the protesters. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Here is a part of the speech delivered on March 21, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. I wish to add that our dear people must know that we consume bread wastefully. So much bread is thrown away. The people should know that our agriculture is one of the most dependent sectors on imports. One of the most dependent sectors on imports is the agricultural sector, and it is too dependent. This must be modulated. Of course, combating this dependence is very difficult because some people have very huge interest in the importation of agricultural products and therefore they resist. A few years ago, I asked a minister of agriculture to pursue the matter regarding rapeseed oil, which is an important ingredient for the production of vegetable oil. Basically, he said, of course, he explained it in detail, but this is the gist of what he said, that they do not let this happen because they say that we must import the basic products for oil. In other words, they do not let this happen. They might even use some people in the ministry and inside executive organizations to prevent the production of these inside the country. However, we must stand up against them. This is difficult, but they must do this difficult task. So the first issue is that knowledge-based companies are few in number considering the needs of the country, and the number must increase, in particular in the area of agriculture and surely in all other areas.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Officials should show determination, and showing determination means providing support. This is because knowledge-based companies belong to the people. It is the people and young individuals who establish these companies. But organizations must support them. And support means buying their products or giving them the equipment and resources that they need. Of course, in the report given to me, the ministries that have helped have been mentioned. The same is true of the ministries that have not helped. These issues must be pursued by the Honorable Administration and Honorable President himself. These matters are not within the scope of our work. In any case, the number of knowledge-based companies in every sector can be a yardstick for the progress of that sector in the administration. For instance, if we see that the number of knowledge-based companies have increased in the area of oil, gas and downstream industries, we could, for instance, give a high score to the Minister of Oil and the other way around, too. In my opinion, this could be a yardstick. So the first point is that knowledge-based companies must increase in number.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've
been a number of high-profile train derailments in the United States recently. A Norfolk Southern train derailed on March 6 in Springfield, Ohio, sending 28 cars sliding across the tracks but injuring no one. The crash marks the rail line's second major derailment in just over a month and comes amid lingering questions about environmental and public health in nearby East Palestine, where a train carrying toxic chemicals derailed on February the 3rd. Too many catastrophes. Did you know that there were at least 1,100 and 64 train derailments across America last year, according to data from the Federal Railroad Administration. That means that the country is averaging roughly 3 derailments per day. Why should a country like the United States, still the largest economy in the world, have such a poor infrastructure?
In fact, the United States should not have such poor infrastructure. The problem is that we've been going in the wrong direction, at least since about 1970. So for 5 decades, half a century, the United States economy is moving in the direction of collapse, not because we have to, but because certain political factions and bank and financial political elites have made a decision not to build up our infrastructure, not to build up our roads, our railroads, our electricity grid. And instead, more and more of the U.S. economy is simply a financial economy and a service economy. But you have the financial tentacles of the City of London and Wall Street running the U.S. economy, not the people and not in the interest of the people.
Advocates for rail safety and railroad workers' unions say that the number of accidents remains too high and that companies are not doing enough to prioritize safety on the tracks. They criticize railroads for abandoning well-established safety practices in favor of policies that save money, such as increasing train lengths and introducing automation while reducing crew sizes. There has been so much talk about the lack of money in the railroad system. Is the problem basically about the lack of resources?
The United States has a significant amount of financial reserves, but the money is not spent on the people. The money is spent on military, and it's also, you know, a lot of it disappears in corruption. So, you know, it's as an example, if there is a family and the father makes $1 million and he spends all of his money on things other than his family will be neglected. And I think that's what we're looking at. It's a matter of neglect. It's a matter of corruption. In spending the money on military, they're able to ensure that the people who finance our political system benefit from financing the political system, benefit from their capture of Congress and the White House. And so what we have now is simply a corrupt system where the money is recycled through the hands of corrupt political officials and corporate officials, and the people of the country do not benefit from the wealth in this country. I would add this. There is a difference between wealth and prosperity. The American economic system creates wealth, which focuses the large amounts of money in the hands of a very few people, as opposed to prosperity, which would distribute the funds organically throughout the society so that a greater number of people could benefit from the financial success of the country.
Rail companies laid off more than 20,000 rail workers during a period of a year in 2018 to 2019, representing the biggest layoffs in rail since the Great Recession. The nation's rail force has also dipped below 200,000, the lowest level ever, and down from 1 million at its peak. People working in rail companies say that rail companies put record profits over safety. Could the Ohio derailments lead to major changes in the industry and, on the whole, the corporate policies in America?
We have an economic system of neoliberalism that is designed as a self-serving racket. It is designed to concentrate money into the hands of a few very corrupt people, and it does that very well. So there couldn't be a wake-up call. A wake-up call implies that there would be good faith amongst the ruling elite, that the people in charge of this country would have some impetus, would have some desire to see that the country worked better, to see that it worked in a way that benefited the people, that was safer for the people, that upgraded the infrastructure that the people need in order to have a safe and effective and efficient environment. But that's not the case. So the problem is the United States system doesn't need to change from the perspective of the ruling elite class because it's working perfectly for them. So a wake-up call for the American people, in a sense, yes, because it may be something to alert the American people to the dysfunction of the system that they're, I would argue, that they are being currently oppressed by and mistreated by. But as far as the ruling elite, no, they'll never get a wake-up call because they're getting wealthier and wealthier. And the distance, the economic distance between the ruling elite and the everyday working people is getting farther and farther. And they're perfectly happy and comfortable with that.
The disaster in East Palestine has caused residents and local wildlife to suffer a variety of symptoms. It has also caused chaos of its own in Washington, as officials have sought to pin the tragedy on one party or policy. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has claimed his agency has been constrained by the Trump administration. Buttigieg has defended the Biden administration's work on the rail system, pointing to historic investments in rail safety. Republicans have been quick to respond. They believe Buttigieg is just playing the blame game.
No one wants to take responsibility, because if they did, they would have to face the fact that the United States government, both Republican and Democratic administrations, have failed to take the appropriate measures to build the infrastructure in this country. And it's we could force industry to do the right thing. That's what you can do when you have a regulated industry. The purpose of regulations and the purpose of the federal government, as it says in the U.S. Constitution preamble, is to provide for the general welfare of our people. And we're not. So we're cheating on what should be invested. We're cheating on safety regulations. The United States Congress and Senate and President have no idea, no commitment to deal with this problem on a large scale, just like they have no commitment to deal with the problem we're having in education on a large scale.
The blame game with this finger-pointing and mutual buck-passing is a familiar feature of politics and organizational life in America. Political and bureaucratic blame games and blame avoidance are more often condemned than analyzed. The phenomenon is a cornerstone of America's bipartisan system.
What appears to be two parties. So whichever party is in office, the other party blames that particular party for any incidents of misfortune, anything that happens, any systemic problems. As the system, you know, suffers economic collapse after economic collapse, environmental disasters, the breakdown of our infrastructure, whichever party is in office, the other party takes advantage of the particular instant and event to attempt to gain political advantage. Neither of the parties will ever discuss these problems from a systemic perspective. So this is just the way the game is played in America. In the same way, politically, you can see that when Donald Trump was in power, the Democrats said that he was controlled by the Russians. And now that Joe Biden is in power, the Republicans say that he's controlled by the Chinese. Both absurd claims, but they are effective in distracting the American people from the truth that both of these parties work together.
Days after the toxic train disaster, there was not much scrutiny about the incident. Many have said the scale of the disaster is much higher than reported. There was also news that reporters were arrested covering the story in East Palestine. The media has, of course, covered the stories of derailments, but such stories, especially in the case of the Ohio toxic crash, have not become mainstream.
Unfortunately, we can't count on the media. Media are part of the problem. They do point out when a major event occurs, like the derailment in Ohio, or other events like the current event of the bankruptcy in California. They report on these events. So for a few days, they're major items in the news circle, but they don't contribute to helping to educate the American people on the cause of the event.
In the U.S., the government is not a separate entity with clear lines of distinction from the rest of society. Quite the contrary, the lines of distinction between the corporate elites and the government are blurred and overlap significantly. Corporate money gets politicians elected and directs the respective policies. In this sense, the corporate media is very much a part of the government and often has the same agenda.
You have to understand that in the United States currently, that we have a system of governance that includes the media. The media is now an integral part of our governing system. The overall system is in free fall, it's in collapse. And the media's principal job is to convince Americans that everything is okay, that the system's working fine, and to convince Americans to continue to support the political system. So while the media, I'll put it like this, I think we make a mistake in referring to the public relations scheme for our corporate rulers as a media. It's not a media. It is a tool of our government, and it is a tool of our corporations, which to some extent have become one and the same. It is simply a tool to maintain an order that is a very feudalistic and hegemonic order on the American people.
The United States has pledged more than $100 billion of aid to Ukraine. A growing number of people have started questioning the huge amount of aid being sent to Kyiv. Many who feel the U.S. is spending too much in Ukraine point to domestic causes that could be funded instead.
United States, it isn't like if we had $100 billion, we would invest it in infrastructure. There's no indication we would, because we don't have a commitment to development. We don't have a commitment to helping develop our own economy. We don't have a vision of working with other world leaders like President Putin, like President Xi Jinping, and others to actually have a world develop. We need to create a new paradigm.
According to a recent Pew Research Center's poll, more Americans say that the U.S. has provided too much aid to Ukraine. Joe Biden has vowed to support Ukraine as long as it takes, amid the first conventional war in Europe since World War II. Pew's poll finds 4 in 10 adults approve of his administration's response to the invasion.
The thing to understand here is that the current regime, the Biden regime, the current group of corrupt individuals who are ruling the United States, and you notice I don't say governing, I say ruling, because if they were governing, they would have to take into account the needs of the people of the United States. So the corrupt group that are currently ruling the United States are only concerned about foreign policy. I'll put it like this. They are horrified that the United States will lose its position as preeminent power in the United States because their method of governing, their method of ruling is one of a predatory nature. So they go around the world and they overthrow governments and they meddle in other countries' affairs in a manner that allows them to steal the resources of countries of a lesser power. They are afraid that now that regional powers and that world-class powers such as Russia and China will grow and expand, will provide alternatives and alternative economic systems, and that the United States will no longer be able to act in a predatory imperialist manner.
Joe Biden at times has blamed what he has called the Putin price hike for U.S. inflation. But when it comes to poor spending on infrastructure, he is unwilling to answer questions, mainly from some Republicans, about the Ukraine aid that could be spent at home.
The accusation that the disruption or the causes for the United States inflation in our economy, that this is due to Putin's war in Ukraine, are basically meant for people who don't want to think. So they're looking to say, oh, it's the Russians, it's the Russians, it's the Russians. Just like at other times, our elected leaders will say, it's China, it's China, it's China. This condition in the United States economy is not the result of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. We've been underfunding our economy for decades. The fact that we depend, our supply chain depends on so many different countries around the world, is a problem that we have not invested in the United States itself. We have not made those investments. And we're only blaming Russia or accusing Russia of being responsible because it's acceptable It gives people a way out. It lets politicians mobilize their base, which won't think through the problem, say, yes, it's Russia. We have to spend more money. It's Russia. We have to stop Russia. Russia's not the cause of the inflation in the United States.
According to a new Wall Street Journal survey, more Republicans now oppose continued U.S. aid to Ukraine amid its war with Russia. Are Republicans really worried about the economy, or are they following their own political agenda?
I have no doubt, based on historical precedents, that some of the weapons that are we are being told is going to Ukraine are being diverted to other parts of the world that are being used to arm other various factions throughout the world that the United States uses to create stability in various regions. So they cannot afford to have a very close tracking of where this military aid is going, because some of it, no doubt, is going to places where it shouldn't be going. Additionally, there's a lot of corruption involved, and the United States knows that the corruption is involved. And again, if we look at historical precedent, the United States makes deals with corrupt groups, organizations in the past, including drug cartels and criminal organizations.
According to official data, food insecurity, a lack of money or resources to secure enough to eat, still grips almost 1 in 8 Americans. That's roughly 40 million people. Children remain the most vulnerable, and they're more likely than adults to go hungry in every state. Almost 600,000 individuals are experiencing homelessness in America. About 30% of people without homes are experiencing chronic patterns of homelessness. And on top of these, the healthcare system and infrastructure remains poor. Why isn't there a public backlash to all of this?
Well, the problem in America is that the American people have become accustomed to the abuse that they get from their government. They have become accustomed to the lack of provisions regarding food and a reasonable social safety net. So the American people have been, the things that they need have been withheld from them for so long that they have become accustomed to this way of living. Americans they have no expectation that their government is going to act in their best interest. Sadly, America is at a place where they, and to some extent, our government has driven it into our culture that it would be wrong for the government to help. We have factions, political factions here, who argue against any government help, that actually believe that people who are helped by the government are hurt by that help, that they are then become dependent on the government, and that they will not go out and work on their own and help themselves if the government helps them too much. So the United States has created an environment where the government doesn't do anything for the people, where the people either expect that, or in some political factions argue for that, and in many others simply have come to the conclusion that it's a waste of time to even ask.
The population in America has been growing constantly. With the infrastructure being as old as 70 years, the country has been facing serious infrastructure problems, which has intensified in the past decade. The entire nation is struggling to find a good solution to handle the ongoing infrastructure crisis. The main problem is that America's system of regulations, laws, and finances have been designated for only the expansion by building the new and not for maintaining the existing.
Has been underfunding the economy in terms of infrastructure. Wall Street's not interested in infrastructure. They're interested in making money every minute of the day through their trading on the stock market, which does not produce significant wealth into the economy. It produces money, but it doesn't expand the economy. And they're interested in their feeding the stock market, making money, and then using that to buy politicians or to buy lobbying groups. And the population goes along with this. So the population is not fighting back, except at particular points where they see how egregious the policy are. So now people are very upset about what's happened in Ohio with this derailment, and they should be. And there was another derailment shortly after that. But will they sustain their anger and demand a fundamental change in policy? We have been, for 50 years, I mean, I'm going to be 72, and I've been involved in politics my whole life, since I was a teenager. I've watched this process. We have deindustrialized our economy.
there is a powerful disincentive for politicians who face re-election to spend money on maintenance and renovations of existing infrastructure as opposed to putting it into shiny new projects that will impress their constituents. In the meantime, more money will be sent to Ukraine, and the number of hungry and homeless will remain the same or rise.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. On today's episode, we'll look at the infrastructure issue in the United States, and specifically look at the recent train derailment disasters that have had devastating consequences. America, it claims to be such an advanced country technologically and boasts about being one of the richest nations in the world. Yet in many ways, America is just a completely backwards country. The U.S., it's accumulated all of its wealth through hyper-exploitation of black and brown people across the world. Yet the highway systems in America are inadequate. Roads got potholes, the public transportation system is terrible, and not only that, but the train systems are experiencing massive derailments. And all this is happening because America, it truly only cares about keeping the rich corporate elite rich, which means it's about making them the most money, the most amount at any time. And most recently, if we look at these train derailments, they have been constantly on the news cycle. And in 2022 alone, there were at least 1,164 train derailments across the country, which means that in the so-called United States, there were at least three train derailments per day. But I thought they said America is so technologically advanced in the West. But America, what they do, they use the technology to make mass profits and loot the world of the resources, and they don't invest in the maintenance of critical infrastructure that's important for everyday citizens. And train derailments, they have devastating and disastrous consequences. If we look at East Palestine, Ohio, a train which was carrying vinyl chloride, it derailed. Ultimately, the cart exploded and a massive explosion happened, and the wreck created a days-long fire while spewing poisonous fumes into the air and also killed thousands of fish and other wildlife, as well as displaced residents. And Joe Biden, he didn't even visit the town. Instead, he decided to go to Ukraine because it's clear Biden cares more about funding a war than the victims of environmental disasters in his own country. Another recent train derailment, it happened on indigenous land at the Suquamish Reservation in Washington. And it's being reported that up to 3,100 gallons of diesel have been spilled. And these railroad tracks, they cross through sensitive marine ecosystems that are valuable not only to the environment, but also to the tribe. The tribe has even sued the company, BNSF, who is responsible for the train derailment, and alleging that the company has been trespassing on tribal lands and has been illegally transporting highly explosive crude oil over the reservation without the tribe's consent. So not only are these corporate companies violating indigenous sovereignty, they are continuing the legacy of colonizers poisoning their lands through these train derailments and so-called accidents. These companies are so focused on making the most amount of money that they aren't properly maintaining the infrastructure that they use to make money. They would rather have these trains derail and poison the environment and potentially kill the train workers and community than to actually fix the infrastructure. Again, America is a country that boasts about being so rich and being so technologically advanced, yet its train systems derail at least 3 times a day. And this must be seen as deliberate, because they got billions and trillions for war, but they can't fix railways? It just ain't adding up. Or actually, it does, because this is capitalism, this is America, this is settler colonialism. This is exactly what they do. They want to make mass profits for the corporate elite, while the people of the world, the exploited people in America, black and brown people, suffer. This is Power to the People.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. And thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to The Last Savior. I am Beta, the host of today's episode, and here with me is Dr. Karmi, the expert of today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Doctor.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
At the last episode, we were talking about our reaction of the organization towards the conflicts that you were telling me, that why there is no reaction in a way that exists in the narrations and so on. And you elaborated actually two main reasons of this event in the future. And, there still exists two other reasons about this issue. So I want you to elaborate these for us more. Thank you.
Sure. We talked about the fact that Sufyani, after establishing himself in Syria, he will have a very great war called Gharisiya. Then he will attack Iraq and then the city of Medina. And as you rightly mentioned, the question is that then what is the reaction of the international organizations?
Exactly.
And we said that, first of all, there might not be enough time for them to react. And second of all, according to the narrations, there is a kind of chaos at that time because of bloody conflicts and some diseases, which are called white death in the narrations. And then I would like to add two more points to justify this non-reaction, if I may put it this way, of so-called international organizations. The first point is that we see the same in our time as well. So we are living in a time when we have United Nations, we have so many international institutes, organizations, but still we have some, if I may call them, non-committed countries which allow themselves to attack any country that they like. So it's not something new, I believe. I mean, many people are familiar with such so-called superpowers and arrogant powers. And the same might be said about Sufyani too. So like some of the countries in our time, Sufyani also, because of his power, his great army, may allow himself to ignore all the international laws and attack all the countries that he wishes. The last answer given by some of the contemporary scholars that maybe the reason that there is no international reaction is that the deeds done by Sufyani, like killing the Shia, are in line with the purposes and goals of such countries.
Yeah.
We know that in our time too, when ISIS tried to, I mean, conquer Syria and Iraq and kill the Shia as the main purpose of ISIS, many such countries, the Western countries, they did not have any positive reaction. So there might be the same, I mean, before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, one of the reasons that there is no positive reaction against Sufyani is that his actions are confirmed by such international organizations. So these are four possibilities to justify why there might be no reaction by international institutions and organizations against the movement of Sufyani.
Thank you. Let's go for a short break. Then we're going to come back to actually continue this controversial topic. Stay tuned, dear listeners. Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to The Last Savior. So, up to here, we were talking about the four main reasons of the reaction of the organization, international organization, towards this, actually, conflict of Sofiane. In this episode, we were talking about the last two reasons, which even in nowadays in modern world, we can see some countries that are not committed to the rules that are set by, I don't know, the organizations, government, and so on. And it may be exactly the same in the future too. So at rest, we're going to talk about the conflict between Imam, peace be upon him, and also Sofiane in detail and more.
So in this regard, before going to that conflict directly, we have another part of the movement of Sofiane, and that is called Al-Khasf bil-Bayda. We said that there are five definite signs for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, Yamani, Sofiane, and Al-Khasf bil-Bayda is one of them. But later we will talk about this sign in details. Just let me introduce what it is all about. It is referring to one of the armies of Sofiane, which is swallowed up by the earth in a land called Bayda, which is in Hejaz. But Sofiane himself is not in that army. So this is another part of the movement of Sofiane, but it is related only to one of the armies of Sofiane, and we will talk about this event, which is one of the definite signs for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, in details later in the following session, inshallah. Having said that, regarding the war between Imam Mahdi alayhi salam himself and Sofiane, we know that at that time Sofiane is trying to conquer different parts of the world, like Syria, Iraq, Hejaz. And naturally, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will come to fight with him. And there are many narrations in this regard. For example, Imam Hadi alayhi salam is quoted as saying, Sofiane and Mahdi come to fight each other. There would be a call which is heard from the heaven.
Yeah.
The friends of Allah are the companions of Mahdi. This is in Mu'jam Ahadith al-Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, volume 3, page 36. There are different conflicts between the army of Sofiane and the army of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam in different parts of the world, because the army of Sofiane is not only limited to one part, excluding other parts. But one interesting point is that before going to this conflict, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will invite Sofiane himself toward goodness, toward abandoning all these wars and conflicts and killing the people. We know that this is the lifestyle, this is the seerah of the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, to invite the enemies toward Islam and goodness before going to the physical war. And this is a tradition by the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. The same is true regarding Sofiane. I mean, after going through all these bloody conflicts and killing thousands of people, still Imam Mahdi alayhi salam tries to somehow ask Sofiane to repent and to
maintain the peace.
Exactly. Yeah. And to abandon killing the people. In one narration, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam invites Sofiane and his army toward the truth, informs them about the fact that he's the oppressed Imam. And this is in Bihar al-Anwar, volume 52, page 387. But then Sofiane disobeys, and then there would be a war between them. In one narration, it seems that Sofiane accepts the invitation of the Imam and pays allegiance to him. Mm-hmm. But then the people around Sofiane, somehow again talk to him and somehow deviate him again to go against Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. At least there is one narration in this regard which is not that authentic. That is why we may not rely on the content. But according to this narration, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam asks Sofiane to come to him. They talk to each other, and Sofiane repents and pays allegiance to the Imam. When he goes back to his army, then he says that I paid allegiance to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and then they begin to talk to him. And finally, he again disobeys Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and they will fight each other. So the point is that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and Sofiane for sure will fight each other after the fact that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will try to invite him toward the truth.
Thank you for your explanation. So let's keep the conversation here, and then we're going to come back again.
I